Thanks for joining us on this session called From Decisions to Insights, Using Gen AI to Decode Trends in New South Wales PIC Cases in whole person on Whole Person Impairment. Today we have Frances Beans and Carmen Burston with us from Finity Consulting to speak on this topic. And can I just remind everyone that throughout the session, if you put in your questions through the apps, put in your question in the app, and we'll try to answer them towards the end of the session. But so on that note, welcome, Frances.
Thanks, Vivian, and thank you all for coming along. This is a session about Gen AI, so it's going to be exciting, even if we don't do songs or dances. We do have a paper which is on the IDSS website. It went up yesterday morning, I think, so it's worth a read. This will be the highlights from the paper. So there we go. There's our title slide. There's our table of contents. So we are going to talk through, I'm going to talk about the background. Carmen's going to then jump into the modelling and the results. Then I'm going to chat about conclusions and then happy to take questions after. So what are we doing? We're going to use Gen AI and we're going to read stuff. Whole person impairment is an assessment that happens across schemes all around Australia, and it's used for determining eligibility to benefits. It's also used for determining quantum of particular benefits. Different states will do things a bit differently. We're focusing here on New South Wales. Both of our schemes, CTP and Workers' Comp, that is, use whole person impairment in different ways. If there are disputes about medical issues and about whole person impairment, those disputes can be decided by the Personal Injuries Commission. And if one of the parties disagrees with that decision, then they can either appeal it in Workers' Comp or they can get a review in CTP. And it goes to a panel of one member and two assessors, and they'll do that review. Those reviews and appeals are published on Austlii. And so that's the information that we're having a look at, and that's what we're feeding our Gen AI to read and then tell us stuff about it. There are about 3,000 decisions, so we've used Gen AI to read through those 3,000 decisions, and then we'll present the results. The process, though, is something that could easily be extended. And in fact, I think many insurers are already doing this sort of stuff. You know, they're using Gen AI to summarise case notes. They're using Gen AI to categorise information they have and put claims into different categories. So this is the same sort of thing that insurers are already doing. We're just doing it to a particular aspect of the New South Wales Workers' Comp and CTP systems and sharing what we learned, all the areas we got tripped up in. Oh, sorry. So we're going to talk about background now. Why does this matter? So WPI is, as I mentioned, a gateway or a threshold. This slide is just showing for the two different schemes, workers and CTP, the threshold element. So for workers' comp, if your WPI is under or 10% or less, then you are not eligible for permanent impairment benefits. But once you get to 11% for a physical injury, you can get permanent impairment benefits or Section 66 of the Act. It also will extend some of your statutory benefits at 11%. At 15%, you can get the permanent impairment benefits for psychological injuries, and you can lodge a common law claim or a work injury damages claim for both physical and psychological injuries. And once you get to 21%, your statutory benefits are extended to retirement plus 1 year or medical benefits for life. So the cost of the claims is very different. A claim with 5% WPI will be cheaper than a claim for 35% WPI. In CTP, it's used to determine eligibility for non-economic loss or pain and suffering or general damages in a common law settlement. So less than 11, there's economic loss only. If you're greater than 11, then you can get economic loss plus non-economic loss. WPI gets assessed. It is a medical assessment. You've got to be very clever to do it. So you've got to be a medical specialist like a neurosurgeon or a psychiatrist. There are different ways it gets assessed in the two schemes. So New South Wales and CTP, we use the fourth edition of the American Medical Association's Guides to the Assessment of Permanent Impairment with amendments and adjustments. And in workers' comp, we use the fifth edition. There are a whole bunch of adjustments that get made to those guides to actually do the assessment that the specialists need to follow. And for psychological injuries, we have a separate assessment system called the PERS scale, the Psychiatric Impairment Rating Scale. Both CTP and workers' comp use that PERS scale. So that's the WPI bit. We're not up to the Gen AI. It's coming. Now we're looking at the PIC. So PIC is the Personal Injuries Commission. It was created in 2021. It replaced some other tribunals that had previously existed for a long time in CTP and workers' comp. It's a single tribunal that hears both CTP and workers' comp disputes in two separate divisions. There are lots of claims in the scheme. There's more than 100,000 claims each year in the New South Wales Workers' Comp Scheme, and there's about 13,500 CTP claims that are lodged each year. Many of those will have a medical issue. Most of those will have some kind of medical issue. That's why they've been injured, and so they're lodging a claim for compensation. Some of those claims will have disputes, and some of those disputes will go to the PIC and be assessed by a medical assessor, and then the medical assessor will make a decision. And that's the two charts, the bars in the two charts show the number of disputes at the PIC that relate to a medical issue. So left-hand is CTP, there's 4,000+, and then we've got over 5,000 on the workers' comp side. You can appeal or review, depending on if you're in CTP or workers' comp, that decision by the medical assessor. And those appeals or reviews are heard by a panel comprised of two medical assessors and one member. So those three people then look at the evidence before them, and then they may do another assessment, and then they'll make a decision. Of the appeals, some of them will never finish. You know, it'll be withdrawn, or it'll be dismissed, or it'll be settled before that appeal is actually decided. That's the blue in those. It's about half of all of the appeals. And then there'll be half that go to determination. And those appeals, about another half, are published, and they end up on Austley. We're almost at Gen AI. So when they get published, it goes up on Austley. Austley is the, I'm not actually sure what it stands for, but it's where lots and lots of Australian legal, and other countries as well, legal decisions and legislation is put up. It's all in HTML or rich text or PDF. You can get decisions from all of the courts around Australia and quite a lot of the tribunals as well. So for the medical appeal or review panel decisions that are published by Austley, this is what we get. We get a front page, and that has some pretty standard information that I think hopefully that's big enough for people to see. But every published appeal decision will have, it'll start like this. It'll have the assessors, it'll have the person who's lodged the claim, the injured worker or the employer or the claimant or the insurer. It'll have the other party. It'll have some catchwords. And then after that, everything's different. So we've got a little bit of structure up front for some fields that we're sort of interested in, and then we've got lots of unstructured data that follows, between 10 to 20 to 30 pages of unstructured data. There's a lot of information in that unstructured data. It's very technical. It's written by doctors and by lawyers. So as you'd expect, there's lots of technical stuff in there. And it's a complicated area because it's not only assessment of an injury, but it's also arguments over that assessment. So was that injury related to the accident or not? Was the assessment done correctly? Were pre-existing injuries correctly allowed for or not? So there's a lot of argument and a lot of words in those decisions. We're nearly at Gen AI. We're getting close. So there are, we've just put up the numbers of decisions that have gone to determination. So they're published. We've downloaded these decisions, and then that's what we've put through our Gen AI model. So almost 3,000 of them. There are, I think, 20-odd decisions that we couldn't find or get to work for some reason, but we've got 99.5% of them. So now it gets exciting. Now we are going to use our LLMs to query these decisions and then come back with some very exciting results. So I'm going to hand over to Carmen to take us through that.
We know that one of the foundational strengths of large language models is that they can read, but can they read good? You may have already seen a few humorous kind of hallucinations, but we thought we'd take you through a simple and simple to create hallucination that we were able to produce with just a couple of prompts to Claude. We asked Claude to tell us the majority justices in a recent High Court decision. It returned a convincing answer. We then asked how many... We then asked how many judgments were issued. Again, a convincing answer. Just the one judgment. We then fed the text of the decision to Claude and asked the question again. It was able, from the text, to determine eventually that there were five separate judgments. It quickly corrected itself from its original answer of four. So what do we take from our little example? It's a couple of things. The results are improved when the actual text is provided to GenAI, and it matters how you ask things. Developing and refining the prompts was an iterative process. We focused on a few decisions developing our prompts, and we broadly followed the same structure of instruction, context, formats, examples, constraints, and enforced accepted values for certain cases. We did this for each of the 50 questions that we asked. Essentially, the task of developing prompts can be complex and can feel times unnatural. As a reader, we're used to discerning context and inferring meaning from vague and varied text. We can read a document and evaluate it, overcoming inconsistent presentation and other shortcomings. Gen AI, by contrast, can be literal, overconfident, agreeable, and inventive, if not provided with sufficiently detailed context, instructions, and constraints. You need to be aware that there could be multiple dates of injury, that to ask about surgeries, you need to ask about the specific surgery related to the injury that's subject to the determination, not just a surgery in a person's life. And to ask about body parts, you need to make sure that these are still output, or injuries to body parts, that these are still output, even if the outcome of the decision is that there was a zero WPI. In the AI's mind, there was no injury. So how did we do this? This is just a very simple diagram of our process. A bit of a disclaimer, our use of GenAI is not intended to be pioneering. It is, in fact, decidedly ordinary. The novelty of what we have done is to use GenAI to, you know, synthesise unstructured data to determine if there's any insight to be gained from kind of a collected analysis of distinct and unrelated legal decision points. This is the kind of rich data source that should tell us something about scheme trends or help us in preparing for scheme reforms. At a high level, we used Python scripts to download the decisions as PDFs. These were published on the OSLI website. A second Python script then ingested these individual decisions into Gemini 2.5. We could have used any GenAI model, but 2.5 helped us with the right mix of accuracy and token cost efficiency. We also ingested a configuration, basically our list of 50 prompts in a spreadsheet set out with those instructions, details, example output, formats and constraints. The process of ingestion and extraction occurred individually for each decision, so which then improved the accuracy of the output. Gemini was asked to read and respond to each specific text, using the text to inform its answers. What was output was a couple of things. So we had individual extractions with the response, Gemini's accuracy score, and a justification for its accuracy score. Oftentimes that justification included reference to the original text. It helped in the review process. Also output was the key thing, which was a data set of 3,000 rows, each row record being one of the decisions. So we've got our data set. What did we do? We reviewed it. We reviewed a subset. We reviewed 30 cases, about 1% of the decisions, to mark, Gemini's homework. We focused on a subset of 15 prompts, some more objective and some that would require more context or reasoning from the model. Note that some questions have fewer responses than others. That's because not all decisions are related to a WPI assessment. So what did we find? What was returned from GenAI was actually quite accurate. In our view, based on the files that we read, we would put the accuracy at 95%. But there were some fields that scored in the 80s and one field that was in the low 70s. I guess legal decisions are complex, particularly when they also incorporate specialist medical commentary. So where did Gemini not do as well? Some of the differences were due to the fact that some of our prompts were too narrowly defined. So back to the date of injury example, could encompass multiple claims in the single decision. Does it put the first mention down or what? We didn't allow for multiple dates of injury to be recorded. Some of the differences were due to the complexity or nuance in legal decisions. What does success mean? If a medical assessment certificate is revoked and reissued for the same WPI, is the appellant considered successful? And what if the worker has a current WPI assessment of 13%, appeals and is reissued with a WPI of 14%? This is still just shy of the work injury damage threshold in New South Wales. So are they still successful? We tried to get at this with the degree of success field, but in the end it probably focused a bit too much. It was defined in such a way that it focused on the movement in the WPI scores wasn't comprehensive enough to deal with the kind of range of outcomes that were possible. So we didn't rely on that too heavily. So results and insights. These are legal decisions, so we can tell who won. The charts show by scheme and by injury type and by who initiated the appeal, who won the appeal. So on the left, we've got workers in blue, CTP in red, lighter shading is psychological injuries, and darker shading is physical injuries. So the things that the Gen AI was able to pull out was who initiated the appeal, who won, what the primary injury type was, what the determination year was. So, you know, interesting things that you know, don't exist nicely in a data set. We can clearly see an upward trend in psychological appeal success rates in workers who are successful around 70% of the time. We can see that for employer-initiated appeals, the success rates are kind of flat at 60. So workers at 70 are slightly more successful than employer-initiated appeals. For CTP, there's less of that shape. And just for context, even though we don't show it, around 70% of all appeals are initiated by workers and 75% of claimants initiate appeals in CTP. So that's just, you know, nifty. Doesn't tell us much about WPI. Appeal success is one way to look at it, but can WPI or movement in WPI tell us more about success? So here, again, we show workers and CTP. The x-axis is the movement between the initial WPI score and the final WPI score. Lighter shading is psychological injuries and darker shading is physical injuries. So we can capture what the initial WPI is from most from almost all the determinations, actually, or decisions. So this is the WPI that in most cases is being appealed or reviewed as part of the decision. We're also able to capture the final WPI or the outcome of the appeal or decision. So we can see that for workers, most decisions or most appeals result in no change to the WPI score, around 40% of all decisions. So even though we saw appeal success rates in the 70s, the success could have just been the reissue of a medical assessment for the same WPI. This is where that degree of success kind of insight would be helpful. The movement in WPI scores, what else can we tell? The movement in WPI scores is broadly similar for physical and psychological decisions. I'm not too sure I expected that. And the movement in WPI scores is slightly more positive for workers. So more decisions lead to a slight increase in WPI, though 25% of decisions still lead to a lower WPI. For CTP, it's a different shape. There are kind of three peaks. There's no change, more than 5 points change and greater than or less than 5 points change. Sorry, more than negative 5 points change. For both injury types, there is more likely to be a downward revision in WPI. And I think almost 50% of reviews will lead to a lower WPI score for CTP, with psychological a bit stronger. And then kind of semi-related to WPI scores, but, you know, an example of kind of the broader range of things that we could pull from the decisions, what is the level of pre-existing injuries? So, again, a similar chart, workers on the left, CTP on the right. The darker shading is the number of decisions that involved a pre-existing injury, and the grey lines are the proportions. So why do pre-existing injuries matter? Well, they kind of can influence the WPI score. They kind of, in a reform context, if we're thinking about changing deductions to WPI scores for pre-existing injuries, it's good to know how many people could be or would be impacted by that. The other interesting thing to note is that, this was determined was we could actually, from the decisions, pull out the individual body part deductions. So it is based on kind of the WPI scores themselves. So for psychological conditions, it is a pre-existing psychological injury. There's a difference between workers and CTP, and we think that makes sense because oftentimes in workers' comp, there's a fair proportion of claimants who have a previous work injury and a previous work claim. This is less likely to be the case in motor accidents. I think that's it.
Thank you, Carmen. So we've just got some concluding thoughts about our 3,000 decisions. So first thing is cost effectiveness. Gen AI allows us to do what we can do as human beings. We can read, but it can do it a lot quicker than what we can do. So we ran this through 3,000 decisions. Those decisions on average are about 20 pages long. So altogether that's 60,000 A4 pages. If it was Carmen and I doing that manually, then we would spend about 1,500 hours reviewing all of those. They're technical decisions, so it takes a bit longer than a novel to read through. But once you get used to it, you can move relatively quickly. But still, 1,500 hours is basically a full year worth of work. In contrast, AI can do it much, much more quickly. And the cost was about $2,500 in token cost. So a lot cheaper than having a person sit there for an entire year and read 3,000 separate judgments. We pulled out, as Carmen had shown, a number of quite specific elements that were buried in the text of the case. So was there a pre-existing injury? What was the initial WPI, which was subject to appeal? What was the outcome of that WPI? Those are bits of information floating around in unstructured text. It's not sitting in the same spot in every single decision. But we really just scratched the surface of what you could do. And one of the exciting things about Gen AI is if you wanted to capture this sort of information in a systemic way historically, you'd build a data set and you'd specify how you wanted to capture things and you'd get people to populate that data set as you go through. And then if you got to the end of that process and you thought, oh, I really wanted to ask about, was there a support person who went to the WPI assessment? The only way to capture that is to go and read all of the decisions again. And that takes forever, a year. Every time you have an extra question, it takes you a year to go and answer it because you can't remember 3,000 questions, 3,000 decisions worth of information in your head. At least I can't. Carmen may be able to, but but Gen AI, you can put your question in and you can send it off and it will go through those 3,000 decisions and it will extract that information. You've got to check it, but you can then use that to populate that data set. So you can basically back populate data sets with rich information from unstructured text that you have. So it is very exciting. There are limits though. So the information we have used is not representative of either the CTP or the workers' comp scheme. We're looking at appeals. So to get to an appeal, you have to have had an injury. So you've got to be in the scheme. You then have had to have had a WPI assessment or some other question about medical treatment. Most of our decisions are about WPI assessments. So you have a WPI assessment. You can't agree with the insurer or the employer about that assessment. So you go to the commission and you get that assessment. You get an assessor to make a binding decision. You then have to appeal that decision because you don't like the decision or the employer appeals that decision. And then finally, you have to go through to judgment. So that's not a representative sample. We can't extrapolate from these numbers about the scheme in general. It's interesting, the trends that we can see, but it doesn't tell us about all the claims. It's comprehensive in that every claim that appealed we know about, but for what we're doing, there's a big limit then. If you've got a claims data set where you have information about every single claim, then you can be comprehensive. But you just always have to keep in mind what information have I got, because that will limit what you can do with it. Gen AI is pretty accurate most of the time, as long as you ask questions. And we found that the process of going through the prompt design and then going through the audit process was helpful in not only to sort of confirm that the answers were pretty accurate, but also to highlight to us some things we hadn't realised about cases. So Carmen mentioned the date of injury, for example. There were a couple of cases where date of injury wasn't clear, and we had assumed that each decision would be about one injury, and that wasn't the case. Some of the decisions were about multiple claims with different injury dates that had all been put together for a single tribunal decision. And the last point there is ethics and professionalism. So we're, at least for the actuaries in the room, we're actuaries and we're bound by the code of conduct. It has some pretty stringent requirements of actuaries when they're providing professional services. You need to act with integrity. You need to comply with rules and regulations. You need to act with competence and care. You need to be objective, and you need to communicate well and speak up as well. So those are important principles that still apply even with Gen AI. We found a couple of articles. I've listed the two there, one by Julie Evans and Stuart Roger, and one by Dr. Huang about using AI within our actuarial control cycle, if you like. And it kind of works quite neatly. You know, AI is a tool to extract information, the way we've used it, a tool to extract information. You still have to think about all the things that actuaries have to think about when you've got data. Is it credible? How did I get it? Is it comprehensive? Is it biased? How can I use it? Are there privacy limitations? All those things still apply. But those articles are helpful in sort of thinking through them. We might leave it there and then jump to questions, I think.
Thank you, Frances, Carmen. Very interesting. I can't wait to see which assessors are more likely to land a certain way in their assessments. So just remember that you can put questions in through the app. I realise that if you click on the program and you can't find the Q&A button, if you go through menu, you can go down to Q&A through there. So we're in session 7C if you want to put in a question through that means. We've also got a microphone there right in the middle of the room. So in terms of some of the questions that we've got coming through, there was one around, were you able to determine the average percentage deduction for pre-existing injuries?
Yes, we could have. But yeah, we didn't determine.
We've got a microphone.
Oh, a microphone, sorry. Yes.
Sorry, is there a microphone?
I think it's okay.
Thank you.
The answer is yes, we can determine the value of the deductions by body part.
Yeah, so what we scraped, what we took out, what the individual deduction for each injury, and we could see if that was the 1/10 standard deduction, which is what is made if there's not enough information to assess it as a specific deduction, or if it was a different percentage for that particular injury.
And there was a question around, was there a reason for using Gemini as opposed to other Gen AI tools?
Yeah, it was just the token cost balance with the accuracy was the view. I think it was a bit of a test trial, so we just wanted to keep it cheap-ish. That was the main motivation.
And is there the extent of better performance in Gemini? Do you have a sense of what that would be?
No, I couldn't comment. I'm sorry. But it's worth, I think, testing a few in the iteration phase, probably testing a couple of models could be something that we would do. So Claude was giving, you know, despite its little high court problem, it was giving better answers generally. So I think you got to test them all. Similar, to pre-existing injuries, we could also pull out consequent injuries because they're kind of normally separately named. So that's another nice little thing.
Then we've got a question here around how much effort was required to refine your prompts to achieve greater accuracy.
Yeah, so that's probably the most time that was spent was getting that process down. I mean, we've already got Affinity, kind of a a way of approaching those problems, like, you know, the format, the structure, how you kind of, so we didn't have to come up with that. There's already kind of a best practice way that's implemented, but just the, yeah, it's a bit unnatural to think about all the possible ways that a question could be asked and all the possible ways it could go wrong. And then you only see it when you run a different case and you think, oh, I didn't think of that, for example. So it did, you know, like building a house, it takes the longest to get out of the ground. So it was a bit like that.
And question for me, I know you talked about you've put each decision through and you asked it to answer the sort of the 15 or the 40 questions you've got. Did you give all the questions were given all at once?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So, yes, that's right.
Did you find any difference in outcomes if you fed the questions one at a time versus...
I actually found it more accurate doing the schema approach than when we... Because I had forgotten to ask whether one question, and I thought, oh, I can just run it through myself in Gemini and not build it, not, you know, spend or not, you know, take the time to ask the or ingest the 3,000 cases again just for this one field. And it was actually quite inaccurate. It wasn't good. So then in the end, we just we did a little subset version to answer that question.
I found a similar thing with Gemini as well. Asking lots of questions all at once gave it better context. Did you ask GenAI to identify any other outlier decisions?
No, we didn't ask it to make connections across cases. Mm.
Or inconsistencies.
I would have. Yeah, and that was something that we found. We had to be very specific and feed it one decision at a time. So in the hallucination example, we've previously tried to say, can you look at this website and download decisions and tell me something about lots of decisions? It's not very good at that at all. It was only good when we fed it specific information. And so as a result, what we found useful was we had a very repeatable task, which was feed it one decision and then ask some questions on that decision. And then we did the analysis. Maybe one day GenAI will do the analysis for us as well. But we had to really chunk it up, and all we wanted to do was read the decision and answer our questions.
And we've got a few questions here around testing accuracy. So there's a question around how do you evaluate accuracy? Was that a manual process? And did you consider out-of-sample testing?
No, we just manually. Yeah, we just manually reviewed them and kind of just marked the homework. That was the process. And, yeah, you realise different things while you're doing it. It was actually, in some instances, I was surprised. For example, it was able to identify that a person who had a cortisone injection, and it didn't classify it as a surgery, which I would think was, you know, like the correct approach. So in some ways it was surprising in its accuracy, but then at other times disappointing in its inaccuracy.
And still a related question. So someone commented that 95% is a very good outcome. Was it ever considered that perhaps the data was overfitted overfitting the data potentially being considered by partitioning of data?
No, I mean, sorry, it's not as statistical as that. It's a count of the score, so it wasn't a matter of being overfit. I think we asked questions that we kind of thought it would give good answers to, categorical type. We're at the end trying to produce an actuarial type data set, so we're asking questions that would give us categorical type answers that we could, you know, look at for areas, I guess, you know, domain knowledge of New South Wales CTP and workers schemes to inform the things that we think could be potentially having an impact on scheme trends.
And that domain expertise is a critical part of being able to ask the right questions. So you need to understand what the PIC is and what New South Wales is and how those things fit together, because otherwise... Again, if we just ask very generalised questions, that's when we seem to get hallucinations and that's when we get problems. We sort of know enough about the task at hand that we could do it ourselves, but it would take us a very long time. So we wanted to get GenAI to repeat what we know how to do, just do it a lot. And then I think that's why we were sort of getting accuracy levels that we were pretty happy with, because they were specific questions, because we had refined prompts, and because...
you're digging for...
Yeah, that's right. And then the audit was a genuine audit in that we ran it across the cases and then randomly chose 30 cases at random. We chose about half and half CTP and workers' comp, and then we read them ourselves. after the fact and then compared our responses against GenAI's responses and marked. And that was very subjective, obviously. You know, we decided what was partly right and what was incorrect, but that's okay. We're actuaries. We can mark our own work.
So,
go on. No, I've got nothing to say.
So two related questions. One is, what do you intend to do with the tool moving forward? And someone else also asked, would you be open to share with schemes your approach to replicate in their jurisdictions?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, the tool we borrowed from something that pre-exists that was used to clean up broker quotes. So that's where we took the machine part from, and we've applied it to reading legal documents. So it's basically, you could replicate the same thing individually yourself by using it, by just putting the schema into GenAI and asking the same questions. All that we did was just to automate it, make it a bit faster using a couple of little scripts.
Mm-hmm. And the process, like, it's in the paper. You can read the paper. It's a bit like Excel as a tool. It's magical in a sense that, you know, it gives you these very convincing answers. But, yeah, it's a tool that anybody can use. There are free versions that you can, like Carmen said, you can just pop the judgment in and ask some questions and you get exactly the same. Well, you won't get exactly the same answers because LLMs always seem to give you different answers, but you kind of get the same answers as what we were getting. Hopefully, for the simple things like who are the medical assessors, you'd get the same answers as what we got. But it's available to anyone to use. So our little Python script was basically automating that. But I'd encourage schemes to have a look and think about applying it to the data you have in case notes. So this is an example because this data is publicly available. We don't have to worry about privacy or anything like that because it's on the internet. But it's such a biased sample because it's only the appeal decisions. But you can do exactly the same thing to the information that you have in case notes and really enhance the data sets that you have with payments and with categorical variables with a whole lot of additional information, including stuff you only just think about, you know, halfway through your analysis and you say, I really want to know about that particular, is there a trend there? Well, you can use a tool like this to send the decisions off to an AI and ask those questions and get pretty accurate responses.
And I guess what we weren't able to do, sorry, just from this, you know, CTP and workers are a process. There's a lot of process information that isn't captured in payment transactions or claims header type files. So to the extent that case notes would capture that process better or have dates about when things happened or didn't happen, then that's like kind of another dimension. Jeff? Sorry.
Might be stating the obvious. I assume that if you can then get all the reports of the medical assessors that go into PIC, you've got 10 or 20 times as many examples. And then you go back and if you can get the IME reports that are done individually to feed into that process, then you with little incremental effort but a lot more computing power, you can build a story of the whole scheme, WPI.
Yeah, that is true.
Just need those decisions.
Yes.
And then perhaps one final question, not related to GenAI, but any insights on why CTP dispute rates are a lot higher than in workers' comp?
That is a fascinating question. Yeah. So I wonder if it's because the relationships are very different, perhaps. You know, the workers' comp scheme has relationships with employers and maybe things are managed slightly differently that we don't get to the dispute. It could be that workers' comp insurers are much nicer than CTP insurers, maybe, and that's why we don't get disputes. I'm not sure. But yeah, no, that's a really interesting question that GenAI wasn't going to help us with. The other interesting thing was the difference in pre-existing injuries, which I think, as Carmen mentioned, that had a much more logical explanation that, yeah, we don't see the repeat claimants in CTP as we do. So that we have a nice answer for. But, yeah, the level of disputation, I guess, not quite sure.
The origins of the scheme are different, I guess. CTP's existed as an at-fault scheme in New South Wales and then has gone through a series of changes. So, the origin story is different.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah,
absolutely. Okay. All right, well, join me in thanking Francis and Carmen for their
Thank you all.